Okay, so we're up for Beat the Devil, and that's a song that probably to a lot of people's enjoyment kicks off with loud guitars.
You're talking about me, just say it. Say it. You're talking right about me. You don't have to beat around the bush, just say it.
I was actually not thinking about you. I was to be honest, I was thinking about a lot of the comments on the Facebook group where a lot of people seem to yearn for this kind of thing, that it's too muted, it's too watered down, which is the comment I almost resent a bit. I can understand the yearning for harder edge stuff, but it's not watered down. It's just they're going for something different. But at least this song kicks off with loud guitars, but the verses keep the more muted approach. And again, this is almost what I would call a night song. It's a song seen through tinted glass with certain moods. So it's a nice song, but it's not a song that works as well as some of the other night songs on the album. I guess you could almost call it a labor song. Not like you give birth, but I think John Lennon used that track. You know, back in the day, they would write an insane amount of songs with the Beatles. And I know for A Hard Day's Night, he wrote like 30, 40 songs and just brought them in. And well, these are just, you know, I labored over them and just did it. It was just a work. And I just picked the best ones. So that was his approach to it. This song has a bit of Big Country by Numbers feel to it. It's I would not call it a remarkable song, but I would call it an enjoyable song on the level that it is. And to me, on a ranking level, this song is almost the balance point of the album. The songs that I like better than this one are good. The songs that are not as good as this one are disappointing. So to me, this is a song right on the tipping point of the album. That, right, Beat the Devil, it quite works for me, but it shouldn't slip far down to not work for me. So this is one, again, where the demo is better than the album version. I like the intro of the demo. I think it's ominous. It's got that something is coming feel to it, which the album version lacks a bit. I also like the wailing guitar that underpins actually the night feel that I talked about. It's almost like a wolf against the moon. So I think that's gorgeous. And the less polished approach works. And at times, this song is almost progressive. And if we compare the demo and album a bit more direct, there's a really cool section, or it should have been a really cool section. This is a really progressive section, but it's a bit too muted. It should spark more. And if you listen to the exact same section on the demo, so the demo version sparks a lot more, even though the playing is quite similar. It's this is a really progressive part, and it's a part that should be a standout. For some reason, that part is too muted. So this is one of the parts on the album where I think the mutedness could have been dropped.
Interesting. Yeah, I agree with you. When I heard this song initially on the album, I fit right in with that category of what you're talking about, because I thought, oh, you know, hard guitars, great, finally. And that was my mindset back then, and I was probably willing to give this song more credit than it deserved because of that fact alone, you know. But it's not a bad song. I would call this I heard someone use this term for another band once, and I think it applies well here. It's like good filler. It's not a great Big Country song. It's not a classic Big Country song. It's filler. It's a filler song, but it's good filler. Just kind of, you know, just like grabbing a snack that you like occasionally. It's not a great meal, but it tastes good, and then you forget about it. That's kind of how I feel about this song. Although I will say, you know, lyrically, the more I think about this song lyrically, I think there's probably a lot more going on here than than just a throwaway type of song. I mean, I could be completely wrong about this, but I get a feeling that this song is about Stewart's battles with alcoholism. At least that's how I've always interpreted it. You know, when I became more aware of Stewart's problems, I began to look at other songs, and I think this is one of those songs. I mean, especially when you think about Devil in the Eye from Driving to Damascus. I mean, here we have another reference to devil being being possibly alcohol. And you know, when I hear him talking about the time is here, the way is long, you may smile at the serpent song, but I know I've got to face the devil tonight. In a way, and this is a little bit of a reach, but I almost interpret that as if he's talking to someone who's not affected by the lure of alcohol the way he is, and they kind of smile at it.
Yeah.
But he has to face the devil. He has to try to fight it. You know, this person may be able to take a little drink with him and be fine, but if he takes that drink, he's going to go right down the wrong path.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I never thought of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, like I say, I could be wrong, but that's the feeling I get. And when he says, I know I've got to beat the devil tonight, he wants someone to be his guide, be his light. And the other song that kind of gives me or the other part of the song that kind of gives me the chills is when he says, tonight my blood wrote, actually, this is another one, but he says, tonight my blood runs cold and you don't know what I was told. I think that's a cool line. I don't know exactly what it means, but it kind of gives me a little chill. But the one that really gets me is when he says, the sea turning black, the sky turning red, and someone lying in my bed. And it's like, is he talking about someone lying in his bed, or is he talking about someone telling him a lie while he's laying in his bed? You know, maybe that's the craving for alcohol as he's laying in his bed that's coming to him. You know,
and it's really interesting how that little bit changes through the song. It starts with he has to chase the devil, then he's got to face the devil, then he has to beat the devil and lose the devil.
Yeah, exactly. And chase the devil, I guess, wouldn't really fit into my metaphor there, but maybe it does. I don't know, but
yeah, because it starts out and then he's got the urge and then he has to face it and he knows he has to beat it and eventually lose it.
Exactly. And that's
what gives me a chill. I'm sorry, but
no, go ahead.
What gives me a chill with this is if this song is about that and he talks about, you know, please help me and give me guidance, and you see the thread starting with songs like Save Me. And it continued with songs like, you know, Ships, Wherever You and My Ships Were Down, and songs that seem to cry for help. That gives me a bit of a lump to my throat today.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you know, when I talk about this song, and before I thought about it this way, it really did seem like a throwaway song to me. You know, like almost here in America, we have a lot of, and since this album is kind of rooted in Americana in a way musically, and then with the Wizard of Oz stuff, but you know, and I'm sure this is true at other places too, but here in America, we have a lot of old folk tales about the devil appearing to people back in the colonial days, and them people making deals with the devil or bets with the devil, and to see who could get their soul and to see if he would get their soul or not. And I originally thought of the song like that, like this, it's like Stewart's take on one of those American type of folk tales where the devil comes out and he's got to deal with them, and you know, it's kind of just kind of interesting and funny, but I didn't take it nearly as seriously as I did when I started to think about it in the other light of him dealing with his alcoholism and the devil just being a metaphor for that. So, you know, I guess we'll never know, but I don't think it's too far of a reach to think that it could very well be that. But anyway, so that makes the lyrics of the song much more powerful to me. It makes the song itself much more powerful. It's musically, I like the song. It's nothing great. I agree with you about that middle section part. I don't see as big of a difference in the demo as you. I'll go back and listen to it. Now that you said that, you make me want to go back and hear it again. I have been listening to them off and on for the past week or so, but with the exception of that wailing guitar in the beginning of the demo, I never saw a huge difference between them. Although, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, there is one difference that I do like more in the demo, and that is the it's not the drum playing, but the drum parts, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
There's a cool part that Pat Ahern plays in the demo. And it's a very cool part. The only problem is that it's way out of time, and it's not there's not a good groove that they got going there. But I almost wish that Mark would have maybe tried that part, because I think with his great drumming skills, it could have been really, really cool and more powerful. But as it stands, it's more of a straightforward rock type of song with a few little old school big country flourishes thrown in there. You know, not the most memorable song on the album for me. Not bad, not great. At this point in the album, for me personally, the quality is starting to deteriorate a little bit. And never going to a really ultra low level, but it just it deteriorates, and maybe a little bit bump up toward the end. But at this point, a lot of the songs are hitting me about the same, and this being one of them. So mediocre to me. So where would you rank Beat the Devil?
Well, like I said, this is the song on the balance point. The better ones are good. The worse ones are disappointing. So number 8.
It's crazy, Svein. I have number 8 too, and I'm not making this up. Really, the only one that we've been significantly different from at this point is Keep on Dreaming.
Interesting.
The rest have been either exactly or only one off with Kansas. So that's very interesting.
I knew there was a reason you wanted me to go first.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay.
So at this point, I have a suggestion.
Sure.
How about I go first on Leap of Faith? Because we all know what you're going to say.
I may surprise you a little bit with Leap of Faith, but you're not too far off. But yeah, go ahead.
I think anything positive will be a surprise, yeah. So the next one is Leap of Faith, and it's impossible to get into Leap of Faith without acknowledging how my podcast partner feels about this song. I know that to him, this is a candidate for the worst big country song ever. So I will just set up the discussion right away. This is one we will disagree on, because I like this song. I like it a lot, so this should be an interesting one to discuss. But having said that, I will quickly add that I don't think it's a perfect song. I think it's a good song that is marred by a couple of sections that are either not finished properly, or not as good as they could be, or they are ruined by horrible production decisions. And I'll go through mine first, and you can chime through after.
Okay.
The worst bit to me is the return of the horrible singing ladies. They are never more out of place on this album than on this song. And the end of the song is totally ruined. They turn it into the Soul Train at the end there. So this song has a very established mood and feel at that point. And they just totally ruined what they spent the song building. And what kills me is that Stewart tries to join in. He tries to join in with the ladies and sing with them in the same style. Leap of Faith. And he tries to that part really kills me. So that is a horrible way to end the song. I really don't know. All I can think is this is a production decision that the band didn't do. There's certainly no sign of this on the demo. And my wife brought up actually an interesting point, that there was a point where Simple Minds, which is a band that she really likes, they started doing the same thing with adding singing ladies. So Simple Mind had the same singing lady period where they had a lot of similar things happen. But for some reason, Simple Mind seemed to lend themselves more.
It worked better for them because they weren't singing on a bluesy type song too. I mean,
exactly. So it's interesting how singing ladies can come in and either just mar it slightly or ruin it completely. So that's that bit. Less critical, but still a point against the song. I think the chorus feels a little weak, but that's mostly because it fails to be as good as the verses to me. The verses have a much better melody, more interesting things going for it. It's got a more open and subdued feel. I don't know if I was considering this. Is it a little bit repetitive? And it might be, but I feel it's more in an underpinning good way. So it's got a very open feel. It's like the open prairie of the verses. Very nice style there. So the good part of the song is the intro. I think it's very nice, moody. I think the wailing guitars work, where I assume it's Bruce playing the standard rhythm, and then Stewart comes in with the open tuning. So again, underpins the spatialness of the song. Again, a bit like Prairie Wolf Howling Towards the Moon. And there are some really great sections. And going into the lyrics, there's the head on down to the world again, find your pride in the face of sin. That part always just kills me. That is a goosebumps moment.
It's a great line.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And at the end of the song as well, there's a section where he sings, will you fly over my stormy sea? Will you cry everything I wanted to hear, had to hear? That part, those parts I mentioned there are among the best parts of the song. They really work. So there are some parts that don't work, and this is where I wish they used more of the approach on the demo. The demo is quite different. It is very clear that they had the demo, but worked quite a bit on it in the studio to get to what they eventually ended up with. I think the guitar line in the intro is really nice. If they pulled it off right, that would have worked really well. But for some reason, they decided against it. And incidentally, that reminds me, that part, it reminds me a whole lot of the intro to a song by a certain Norwegian band called A-ha. They have a song called Little Black Heart, and they use the almost exact same opening as Big Country does in the Leap of Faith demo. So that's interesting. The backing tracks of the demo are more riff-based. I prefer how they change that on the album version to something more atmospheric, something that keeps the interest a bit more. The riff-based one was more throwaway. What is much better on the demo is the choruses. They are much more interesting. There's much more light and shade there, which is interesting because that's what wasn't on most of the demos, but they managed to get that on the album. So in this case, it's the opposite. They throw interesting guitar bits in there. They intensify halfway through. That would have improved the album version immensely. So this is one song where I don't agree with Pat Morris' production. I have to assume he had a lot to say with the final version. But there are... So like I said, it's not a perfect song. There are songs that... It's a song that could have been a heck of a lot better, but that has a whole lot working for it. And I've always liked the evocativeness, the openness of it. And I wish the chorus had been as strong as the verse. They had the potential for that with the demo version, but sadly that wasn't to be. And I have thrown this tape or this song on compilation tapes in the past, but I faded out before the ending.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. All right, so is it my turn now?
Go ahead.
All right, well, you know, Swine's already set it up and said how I feel about this song, basically. I guess I could say that this is as close as I come to strongly disliking a Big Country song. I got to just say it. This is as close as I come to hating a Big Country song. I don't like to say that because I don't like to say that I hate anything that Big Country does. And I don't honestly do not hate this song, but it's as close as I could ever come to it. To me, there's nothing strong about this song. I mean, everything about it to me is cliched, is boring from the production to the lyrics, with the exception of a couple lines, one of which you mentioned already. Now, I don't know if this will translate as well for a non-English speaker, but for me, Leap of Faith is such a cliched title. Number one, I mean, it's a very cliched theme that you find in lots of songs. I mean, there are probably a lot of songs called Leap of Faith. I know there was a movie called Leap of Faith. I mean, it's one of those phrases that is so overused that it just doesn't have much meaning to me. And this kind of gets back to what I said the last time, where, you know, one of the things that struck me and drew me to Big Country so much initially was not just their songs, but the titles and just the unique presentations and themes and subject matter that they would talk about. So when I saw, yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just have to say at this point, to me, when I first saw the track listing and I saw Leap of Faith, what I thought of was the Indiana Jones movie.
There's
the scene of The Last Crusade where Indiana Jones has to do the Leap of Faith. I think that's the final trial he does before the Holy Grail. Right. So not a bad reference to start off with.
No, that's not bad. Maybe I would have felt a little bit better if I had that reference going in. That opening chord progression that he plays is something that I've heard many, many times over. And it's also the chord progression in the chorus, which I call the Louie Louie chord progression. To me, that's one of the most overused chord progressions in music. It's just like I've heard it so many times. And so I guess if I would hear this song on the radio by another band, I might think, it's okay. You know, I don't really care for it, but it's okay. For me, it was a disappointment from Big Country because I just really felt like it was so unimaginative and it was so much further below what they're capable of doing, you know, from an original standpoint, both musically and lyrically, that it just kind of, I guess why I've heaped so much scorn on it over the years is that it kind of came to symbolize what I felt was something that I guess Stewart in a way confirmed years later when he said that the albums Making Peace in Our Time and No Place Like Home, he said that it was such a struggle making them and that when he looks back, he felt like the people that he worked with ended up diluting everything that the band was about. And I kind of feel like this is the poster child of that. Like this is Big Country, very, very diluted. And I don't feel any sincerity in this song. I don't feel like Stewart means what he's saying. I don't feel like inspired by the song in any way. I feel like it's just lyrics that he wrote down thinking, you know, maybe this will be something the record company likes, or maybe this will be a good radio song. And you know, ironically, I think this probably would have been a better single choice than some of these songs that they released. But you know, I would disagree with you on one point too, as far as the singing ladies. Now, I don't disagree with you on the fact that I don't like them, because I don't like them either. But I kind of feel like they fit in this song, because the song is kind of like, it's in that vein of that old R&B type of music where you would traditionally hear that type of background vocal. So, I mean, I don't feel like it's out of place the way it would be out of place if you would hear them in Kansas, when it would be really out of place. To me, it fits. It does fit the song when they come in, and that's what makes the song even worse to me, the fact that it does fit that song.
Lyrically, you got to be kidding me.
Honestly. I mean, I feel like I could see some R&B guy up on stage singing this song with the backup singers, and it would work out fine. I mean, the song just doesn't do much of anything for me. Now, I will say I agree with you, that line that you mentioned, find your pride in the face of sin. That's a great line, and that kind of is a line that reflects back on another pride line that Stewart has had in the past, pride that grows in hardship, which comes from a infinitely superior song called Tall Ships Go. But that was a lot of the themes that Big Country would interweave into their music, so that's in there, you know, finding pride in difficult times. The other line I really like a lot, too, is when he says, on a wild, wild night, when you might believe all the worn-out lines of a stranger in need. I think that's a cool line. But the rest of it, just, you know, what you going to do when the sun don't shine no more, when the moon don't climb no more, when the tears won't fall no more. To me, it's just cliched, unimaginative writing. And I absolutely, the last thing I'll say about it, I absolutely hate that bridge, the bridge section of the song musically. The Will You Fly Over My Stormy Seas, the lyrics are fine, but there's something about the music to that part that just, it sounds like nails on a blackboard to me. I don't like the chords there. It goes like in a almost dissonant type of sound, and I don't enjoy it.
Insanity.
I don't like the song.
Total insanity. That part is one of the best ones of the song, but there you go. I think the years have left you a deranged lunatic man.
No, because I've always had this feeling. Well, no. So I must have been deranged before. No, What can I say? This is our biggest disagreement to date. Probably will be our biggest disagreement.
I think we should work on having more. But it's going to be hard. But this is one of them. But
we can't force
it. Yeah, because this is one that we saw a long time coming. I mean, we've known each other for 20 years. We've had these discussions. You know, it's expected. You know, yeah, this is the song where Tom is going to have his rant. I've heard it many times before. And it's the same
writing
for you.
I've seen it in writing many times.
Yeah, and it's the same for you and other places. So we need to try and surprise each other a bit more. So let's see. I'll surprise you by ranking this song number 5.
Number 5. Oh, talk about deranged. Okay. Well, you know where this is for me. Number 15. And yes, I know there are only 12 songs on the album, but this song is still number 15.
Okay.
No, it's number 12.
At this point, you have to pipe in. They're coming to take me away. Haha. We haven't talked about my number 12 yet, so it's still to come.
Okay, good. Good.
So let's move on to the next one.
Is that a lead in to the next one for you?
So see, you, me, and the truth. So all you right. Go ahead.
You mean the truth. There may be trouble ahead. I want to read really quickly a comment that one of our Facebook friends wrote about this song. This comes from Lee Waterton, who wrote a comment. We asked some people on our Facebook page to do what we're doing now and rank the No Place Like Home songs. And his number 12 was You, Me, and the Truth. And he just wrote about this song. Why, God, why? What is the point of this song? Which I thought was very funny. Now, I don't feel that as quite as harshly about it as him, obviously, since you've already gotten my number 12 of the album. But this would be up there for me as far as lesser songs on the album. Now I'll say this. The one thing about this song that I put ahead of Leap of Faith is I think this song is got a little more sincerity to it. I think it's a little more interesting in the way it's performed, and there are some cool parts to it that I actually do like. My biggest problem with it is the same thing that I had with Republican Party Reptile. But to a much more of a degree here. It's just not a big country song. I mean, people can say that's close-minded of me and that the band should be able to do whatever they want and stretch out. And I, you know, of course they can. Of course they should. And if that's what they want to do, of course they should do it. But it's my right as a fan to not like it. And that's not what I want from big country. It's not what I like from them. I don't want to hear a big country song that it seems like I'm in a tiny little jazz club and there are these guys up on stage playing this jazz song. And that's kind of what You, Me, and the Truth sounds like to me. It's like a jazzy little blues song, and to me it's just not, there's not much here that showcases what big country is great at. And to me, they when they play songs like this, they descend kind of to a level of mediocrity. Now, that being said, I think this is a really good, from a technical standpoint, this is a really good attempt at doing this kind of a song. I mean, from a production standpoint, there are some really, really good things about this song. Number one, the lead guitar parts in this song, I think, just sound really great. And I've talked about the clean sound on the album kind of getting to me after a while, but I don't apply that to when the lead guitar is playing. I apply that more to like the strummed sound, which you find in Leap of Faith, you find in Keep on Dreaming, you find in Hostage Speaks, and some other ones too. But I don't really apply that to this one. And I think this has some absolutely great lead playing from Stewart. The one lyric that I think sums up how I feel about this song in an ironic way is when he says, can't have what you want, why don't you use what you've got? I won't do things that I can't get. I can't be something I'm not. If you can't have what you want, why don't you use what you've got? I won't do things that I can't. I can't be something that I'm not. And to me, that sums up my whole problem with this song. It's like, okay, if big country can't have the success that they want, why don't they just concentrate on what they do better than anyone and take that to a new level? You know, like I talked about Dynamite Lady, you know, as being a really good example of the band retaining what's great about them but progressing. And then he says, but I won't do things that I can't. I can't be something that I'm not. Well, I feel like that's exactly what they're doing in this song. They're trying to do a version of a style of music that they really aren't cut out to do. And Stewart is trying to be something that he's not quite a few times on this album, I think, from the point you mentioned of him joining in with the women on the Leap of Faith song to being an old blues man to being like more of a jazzy type of guy here. And it's just, to me, it doesn't fit what Stewart's trying to do. It's certainly admirable, and it shows that he's a great musician and he can do a lot of these things, but it just doesn't hit me the way that I want Big Country to hit me. And you know, this is one of those songs that I was really, really disappointed in when I heard it at the time. And, you know, you always have to go back to what my mindset was at the time, which was just starving for the old Big Country magic. Whereas now I can look at a song like this in the hindsight of years past and appreciate more things about it. But it's still nothing that I'm ever going to, you know, go crazy about. And there are a lot of people who love this song, and I give you respect. And I don't mean to belittle your opinions in any way. I mean, everything is completely subjective, as you all know. And it's great that people like this song so much. I'm just not one of them. The one thing that I'll say is really good about it that I really do like is the play out part. I think that's really kind of got a nice little haunting sound to it with the lead guitar playing there. And even the demo of this had a really cool part too that was more of a Celtic feel to it.
So you, me, and the truth. Oh my God! You want the truth? I don't think we can handle the truth. not quite sure.
Faith.
Yeah, how should I put it? I'll say this. Musically, and you touched on this already, the song has nothing to do with Big Country.
Yeah.
Even on No Place Like Home, this song is a strange and an easy fit.
Yeah, it doesn't even fit the album.
No, it doesn't. It's one of, I think, a trio of songs added with Beautiful People and Republican Party Reptile that doesn't fit the album. So if they did a third single, this would probably have been it. You know, I shiver in the thought of that, but the guitars are noodling. It's jazz fusion shit. The rhythm is strange. It reminds me of Beach Bongos. So the whole mood is close to the jazz club strange thing. I find the song to be tripe. It's abysmal. This is as close to as Big Country ever came to playing Muzak. So it's not just my least favorite song on No Place Like Home. This is the worst Big Country song ever. And I can hear the masses already. What about Flag of Nations? Well, at least that had a killer bass line, and they were just noodling with a keyboard. So I'll take Flag of Nation over this anytime. And I can also hear people saying, what about Eggplant? And I think you have to look at that, what it is. No, Eggplant is a piss take.
Well, you can't compare it with a B-side like that.
No, you can't. And that's just the guys having a laugh in the studio. It was probably never meant to be released. And they said, what the heck, the guys might like it. So exactly. It was never meant to be compared with an album track where the band actually made a stab at creating something lasting for people. So there's no way that can be really compared. So in this song, there's not an ounce of Big Countryness in it. And good Lord, those singing ladies, die!
They're in this group, aren't they? I forgot about that.
You bet they're in this. They're all over the place, and it's driving nuts. And the demo is unfortunately not any better. I find them quite similar. So, yeah, I don't like the music or instrumentation of this song. It is horrible. But there is one exception, and you already mentioned it. I like the playout section as well. It has nice guitars, nice guitar work. That really is a nice part. It is a bit separate from the rest of the song, and that works in its favor. It comes far too late to really save the rest of the song. That bit had deserved a better song to prequel it. So that's really all I have to say about the music. It isn't really good. I have looked to the lyrics for redeeming qualities, hoping that even if the music sucked, the lyrics might offer something, but I remain unconvinced. The lyrics are not as bad as the music, but I still find them to be of lesser worth and frustrating, really. On the surface, they appear to be the great, evocative, abstract, big country lyrics of old. But if you look closer, you see that they are vague and really not that deep. And I had an example, and it's kind of funny that my example is exactly the same line that you used. So once again, there's a line that goes, "If you can't have what you want, why don't you use what you got?" And this just strikes me as flaky. It really reminds me of the old hippie anthem, which goes like, "If you're not with the one you love, love the one you're with." I think it's beneath Stewart to rehash triumph like that. It's just another thing I hate about that song. So a little more interestingly, those lines are followed by, "I want to things that I can't. I can't be something that I'm not." And that line gets interesting if you look after, if you think of their situation with the record company and how they attempted to force the band into being something that they were not. And there's been a bit of speculation by several fans over the years on whether this line could be about that situation. I personally think that's a fascinating theory, but we're probably giving the lyrics a little bit too much credit by applying those kind of meanings to them. So it's a cool fit, but instead of being a veiled message, I think those lyrics are just, at the end of the day, the greatest irony of the song. Just like Tom mentioned already, they sing about not being something that they're not on the song where they were never more lost musically. So that's a real head scratcher. So I think the song is exactly about what it appears to be about. The theme is really a should I stay or should I go type scenario about the relationship. And there is room for wider interpretations, but mainly within that context, in my opinion. So this really takes me back to my starting point. I know a lot of people like this song, and that's fine. I would primarily like to know why. Musically, there's nothing about this song that explains why people who like big country music would find what they are looking for here. This song is so clearly not big country music. And what I'm thinking is that there must be fans who like this kind of music outside of big country, and they find it endearing that big country try making something in this style as well. And I can understand that. But I cannot understand how this is more exciting to fans than the big country sound we come to know and love. And I guess some people just like the differentness, and I can relate to that as well. But the irony of that is that this is what the album is primarily criticized for, and this song is the main culprit. So so I don't really get it. But in the end, we are no bigger authorities on how good any song is than anyone who listens. And I hope anyone keep in mind that this is just an opinion show, and we will give you lots of opinions. But what we try to do here also is provide some reasons why we feel the way we do, and hopefully provide some context and reasons behind our opinions. And hopefully that creates an interesting spin on things and ensures that everybody gets something out of the discussion, even if you disagree with us.
All right. Yeah, I don't have much else to say about this. I have an idea of where this is for you. Obviously, this must be number 12 for you, right?
It's 25, I think.
Okay. Well, for me, it's definitely on the bad scale, but not quite as bad. I have it at number 10. I found enough things that I could think were okay about it.
You're close enough for comfort.
Okay, so the next track is Comes a Time, and that is going to be you.
I'm happy that we're moving into much more comfortable areas of the album. this is, again, I feel, a cornerstone song on the album. It's, again, one of their best songs right along with Kansas. Musically, this really works for me. It's much more muted than the early albums, with no loud guitars, no bagpipes, no Ebow. But from a writing perspective, I've always seen this as close as it ever got to the early days without actually having those sounds there again. I've always had the feeling that with Steve Lillywhite producing and the band going for it, this could have sounded like classic big country. Mm. It has all the ingredients of it, the approach is totally different. So also on the lyrical side, there are some fantastic lyrics in the song, almost in the same style as the abstract early days. I've always had a fondness for lines like, "We can storm the walls in our leisure wear while we trap the beast in his stormy lair." That's kind of
my favorite part of the song.
Very, very abstract, and it points back to the early days to me, and a lot of the lyrics are like that. And so all the ingredients from the classic days are there, but again, like he sings in Kansas, we know we're not in Kansas anymore, it's all changed, this is what we're doing now, but you can still find a whole lot of big countryness in at least some of the songs that we're still making.
Yeah, I agree. And I, for me, this song is, I don't feel quite as strongly about it as you do. In fact, I feel differently in probably a larger respect. But for me, Comes a Time has always been two songs. One of those songs is absolutely great, and one of them is average. And to me, the absolutely great part starts with that guitar part in the middle section. That part gives me chills even now whenever I hear it. And it really did on when I first heard the album, because as you said, there's really a lot reminiscent there of older big country stylings, not just the guitar playing, which is definitely reminiscent, but also the lyrics and also Stewart's voice. I mean, I think in that section of the song in particular, Stewart's voice goes back to that feel that he had in the beginning, that which mm-hmm. is to me like his natural singing voice, and he's not trying to sing like an American, or he's not trying to force some other style. That to me is Stewart, pure Stewart, and that part I absolutely adore. Now I like the rest of the song too, you know, don't get me wrong, but some of it doesn't work as well for me. Like, for example, just the opening part of that song. I never liked that. I just thought that was kind of like just there and wasn't a really strong way to open the song. The verse, it gets a little bit better in the verse, but the thing I don't like about the verse is the way Stewart sings. I mean, it's like he's singing in that heart of the world style, and it doesn't do it as much for me. But once he gets to the chorus of Take Me Up to the Edge of the World, then I'm back on board again. And then the other parts, I'm really back on board and, you know, excited. I will say this. I prefer that. This is one of those that I do prefer the demo of, with a couple exceptions. But I like the chorus better in the demo version, when he says, "Here comes a time, comes a time." I like that better. I don't know why, but it has a more evocative lyrical content to me, and reminds me more of big country, like pure big country. But there's another demo called Celtic Dream, which is the demo for Into the Fire. But there are lyrics in that version that he takes and puts into the final version of No Place Like Home, and into that bridge midsection or whatever you want to call it. By some strange God in the good right hand.
Comes a Time is one of my top four. It is actually number four, but I think it's a great, great song. It reminds me a lot of classic big country. It's all there.
Nice. I rank it as number six. So it's for me, it's like squarely in the middle. But I think it's a good tune. Look at him now, another you. Okay, so Ships on No Place Like Home. Now this, I mean, this is another one like Kansas where we're gonna talk about the difference between this and the Buffalo Skinners version. You know, you might be surprised for me, considering my constant talk about quote unquote old big country and the guitar sounds and all that stuff, but I actually prefer this version of the song to any of the versions. I really like the Buffalo Skinners version. I love the guitar parts and Stewart's lead parts on that song. But I think the song is more suited for the treatment it gets here on No Place Like Home. And this is a case where I think this kind of a style, this is another thing, kind of like Dynamite Lady in a way, where you've got a differing style in that big country had never done a piano ballad before, ever. But yet I still think it feels like Big Country on this album. And I can't say that for other songs on this album. But this one to me, even though it's so different, it still sounds like a song that could fit with other past Big Country output. And it just seems like a Big Country song. I remember reading about when No Place Like Home came out. I remember reading Bruce saying that there was a band version of this song that they had recorded as well. And I remember thinking, oh, I would love to hear that. I want to hear the band version, you know, because I'm not, as you probably gathered by now, this isn't my favorite album by Big Country, and I wanted more of the old school Big Country. So I thought, well, maybe if they did a band version, maybe there would have been more of it on there. I'd love to hear it. Well, turns out that probably is the demo that was done with Pat O'Hearn. You see me now, just an old man. We're in the passing up his dignity with all the courage that he gave. He stood in the storm, carved out in stone. But I gotta say, after hearing all of these, I really love this version. I mean, I'm not someone who thinks, I've heard Ships ranked up there with Chance before as being as good a song as Chance, and I don't rank it that high as a song. But I do think it's a great song. I think it's a really beautifully written song. Some of my criticism that I had of Leap of Faith was that I just didn't feel like it was a sincere song. I didn't get the sincerity from it. But this one is totally the opposite. I mean, I think this is one of Stewart's finest vocal performances, and it really shows a really nuanced vocal performance from Stewart that is really beautiful. And it kind of presages some of the stuff he would do with the Raphaels. I mean, it almost kind of reminds me of My Only Crime a little bit. That type of singing, that type of style, the piano ballad going on. But and again, we have, you know, this constant, I think one of the things that makes it sound so sincere and honest of a song is that we've got this return to the sea type of metaphor that Stewart is constantly singing about. I mean, from the very beginning of the band, and we know that his dad was a fisherman, or I don't know if he was a fisherman, but he worked on a deep sea trawler or something, so I guess that would make him that. But and his the fact that his father was gone so much had a big effect on him, and what his father did for a living, you know, I guess because of the fact that made him be absent from Stewart's life for much of the time, it just somehow created this odd bond with him and anything to do with the sea, and that crops up so much in his writing, and here we have it again. And you know, I think it's just a great song. Call me nuts, but maybe this would have been a better choice of single. You know, I know it's a lot different than any kind of tune on the album. It's certainly not a hard rocking song. It's not something that's gonna come out and take the world by storm. But I don't know. Maybe this version of this song would have found a niche somewhere, because these types of songs were popular at the time. And really, these types of songs, if they're done well, never really go out of style. This type of really good, haunting, emotional piano ballad. And this is a song that they did release as a single from Buffalo Skinners, but I think it would have worked better single wise for this version. The one thing I'll say about the Buffalo Skinners version that I think that I don't like as much is that it feels like they just, in that version, they just try to rush through that piano part at the beginning of the song. It's almost like they start playing it and they just like, let's get through this piano part so we can just get the whole band to kick in. And it doesn't have the emotion and the feeling and the passion on that version, at least in the beginning, that it does here on the No Place Like Home version. I mean, it's almost kind of a tear-jerking performance from Stewart, especially for me, kind of the last Where Were You that he sings. I'm not going to sing it, but I'll play it on the show, but just kind of the way he says it and the vocal inflection he gives, he kind of goes up a little bit, and almost his voice almost even cracks a little. It touches me.
Yeah, after that impassioned speech, I wish I was more positive about the song, because I don't dislike it, really. I'm just not that excited by it. So it's more lack of excitement than any active gripes with it. I just think this version is too muted. I'm not a piano ballad man. Interestingly,
it's odd that I like the song as much as I do, because I'm not generally one either, so go figure.
Yeah, but you're quite an enigma on so many levels.
That's true.
I think the interesting bit is that the demo sounds just like the Buffalo Skinner's version. They played with a full band. So again, this I have to assume it's an example of Pat Moran pushing the band towards a quieter version of the song. Maybe the record company did. If they did, it's strange that they didn't use it as a single, like you said. To me, this version does not work. It is, I'm afraid, rather sleep-inducing. It's I can really feel Stewart's passion in the song, but my lack of passion sort of counters that a bit. Interestingly, the demo version and hearing that and hearing the Buffalo Skinner's version made me appreciate the piano version a bit more, mainly because I don't mind having a piano version available after I got what I consider a more definitive version later. So in the No Place Like Home versus Buffalo Skinner's discussion, this is the one song where the re-recording worked for me. I quite vastly prefer the version on the Buffalo Skinner's. So I wish I liked it more, because I can truly hear Stewart's emotion. But I guess a mixture of various things. I have to say, even though I prefer the Buffalo Skinner's version, it's not that high on my list of if I rank that album either. So
yeah,
even though I can really see all the values of the song, it just doesn't click in my brain. I don't get that, you know, this is what I want. I guess the piano ballad sort of always tainted it a little bit for me.
Right, right. And I understand that, definitely. And it's interesting. It almost doesn't even really fit on the Buffalo Skinners. But another guy on our Facebook page, Arlen, he brought up a good point that I had forgotten about, which was that No Place Like Home was never even released in America. So when they released Buffalo Skinners in America, knowing that it was going to come out in America, I think that probably was one of the reasons they re-recorded those songs, because American audiences, they were thinking, you know, had not heard them, and they felt so strongly about both songs that they wanted them to hear them. And but of course, us diehard Americans, which pretty much made up most of the big country fan base in America, both pre and post Buffalo Skinners, you know, we already knew it. We were just interested to hear another version, but we certainly already knew the other ones. But yeah,
I'd like to think that the band wouldn't have re-recorded it if they didn't feel they could add something to it themselves.
Yeah,
there were plenty of songs they could have picked from that album. And although Kansas is a standout and a very clear one to bring on, I'd like to think that if Ships didn't have a special meaning to Stewart, they wouldn't have picked that. They would have picked a more obvious one.
Yeah, and you know, it kind of goes back to him choosing those two songs to bring, talking about when he brought those two songs to the record company. And I there was another part of that quote I remember reading that wasn't in the book, but I think he said that he thought they were like the best things he had written in a long time. And so I think he probably felt like, you know, you've talked about Kansas as being a cornerstone of the album, and I agree with that. I think he probably felt that both Kansas and Ships were like the cornerstones of this album, but from a songwriting perspective,
I think they were the most personal songs to him, with Kansas being almost autobiographical about the band, and maybe this was more from a personal perspective about Stewart. Right. So they probably carried a lot of meaning. So I appreciate this song a lot for what it is. I more study it than sit and enjoy it musically. But it's almost begrudgingly. I'm almost sort of apologetically saying this. I really wish I could get more into it. I just can't. I have to say I give it a 10.
I have it at number 5.
Yeah, so that's again one of the more diverse rankings.
We're at the last track of No Place Like Home, Into the Fire.
Yeah, you talked about Comes a Time as two different songs. I think no other place does that description fit better than Into the Fire. That's definitely two different songs. You have the song itself, Into the Fire itself, and then they change completely into a huge playout section, which is a song on its own, almost tacked on. So that's really interesting, and we'll get to that in a minute. Into the Fire, I can really hear three or four different demos of earlier songs fused together. I can hear bits from all over the place from various demos. So the intro, you know, you mentioned Celtic Dreams. I also hear Time for Leaving appearing here or reappearing here. And various other things that just fit with the intro. And I don't know if this song is a final culmination of years of harvesting ideas and they finally found their home, or whether they threw together something because they needed another song on the album, or what they thought.
Right. I would kind of go with the latter there.
Yeah, I don't think the song is bad, but I have to say, what mars the song for me, or the first part, is that it sort of ends up in the shadow of the long instrumental playout, which is stellar, and talk about not fitting on the album, but
really
that's the Full Tilt Rocker. I think that rocks more than Republican Party Reptile might have some guitars, but this is where Big Country the Rock Band comes. And it's on some level, ending the album on that note almost points the way to the Buffalo Skinners to me.
It does.
So that's very prophetic, if you will. I don't know if the band saw themselves heading in that direction, but in hindsight, that's exactly where this is. It's a link from No Place Like Home into the Buffalo Skinners. So it really has nothing to do with the rest of the song. It feels like a gem that they spliced on. It's almost a bit of Led Zeppelin grooves, some rhythms. And I don't know if the band wanted to prove a point, or perhaps they just liked the thought of going out on a particular note after setting a more moodiness on the rest of the album.
I really, because of that mood that they set on the album, I just wish they had ended it with that same type of haunting mood, and it just doesn't, you're right, it just doesn't fit even remotely.
No, but I've never thought of it as a problem. I'm quite happy they ended the album that way. The biggest problem is, like I said, the first part of that song ends up sort of being shadowed by the second half of the song, and that's a bit unfortunate. But that song is good. It's more like another working song or laboring song. The song, something that they just wrote, sit down, we're going to write the song, and they brought it in. I like how there's a Kate Bush connection in the lyrics.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up if you didn't.
Yeah, come on, angel, come on, my darling. That's got to be conscious. There's no way that's an accident.
No doubt about it. And that's from running up that hill.
So again, interestingly, there's no demo version of this song called Into the Fire, but there's three or four different demos with elements of this song that is fused together. So
yeah, Celtic Dream is pretty much the whole song. I mean,
it's very, very close.
I love the warmth that moments were the summer, as you softly shimmer in seven veils of haze. I feel the rainfall, lifetime's worth of autumns, running on my shoulders like November days.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about Celtic Dream and the Kate Bush thing that makes me almost wonder if those lyrics weren't just like thrown in there at the last minute is that on the Celtic Dream version there are no lyrics for that part. And almost in some ways I go back and forth. I think I'd prefer it without the lyrics. It almost kind of works better that way. And then he puts the Kate Bush in there, and which I think is cool, and I like it too. And I know Stewart was a huge Kate Bush fan. He said that many times. So yeah, there's no doubt that that was taken directly from Running Up That Hill, more like an homage to that, I think, than thievery. But Yeah, it always made me wonder, like, maybe he thought, I got to come up with some lyrics here. And he looked at his Running Up That Hill from Hounds of Love and thought, yeah, I'll throw those on. Who knows?
That's funny. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and apart from that, I sort of in preparation and listening to this song, it's simply an all right. I think we used the word good filler earlier. Filler is a bit negative. It's not a filler song, but it's not a stellar song. It's a good big country album track.
It's a song that reminds me a little bit of Atlantic City by Bruce Springsteen. It kind of has a similar feel to that in the beginning from the chords.
Well, they blew up a chicken man in Philly last night. Now they blew up his house too. Down on the boardwalk, they're getting ready for a fight. Gonna see what them racket boys can do. Now there's...
Yeah, now the only thing I'll say about the end is that I like it too from a technical standpoint. I mean, it really does rock, you know, 20 times harder than anything on this record. But to me, that kind of is the problem. I wouldn't have minded if they would have redone this type of coda in a song on Buffalo Skinners or something. And I don't. It's not like I hate it here, but it kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier about them trying to create a certain mood on this album and maintaining that throughout. And in a way, I feel like that forced coda at the end of this song kind of cheapens that mood a little bit. And it's not like I thought they were so successful with the album anyway, so I probably shouldn't be nitpicking this part, because it's not like I thought it was a perfect album and then this thing came in, but I just feel like there's something that, as the album closes on this song, even though I don't think this is a perfect song, I think it's got that great haunting feel to it that a lot of the songs earlier in the album had, and mm-hmm. I would have almost preferred if they had figured out a way, and I don't know what it would have been, but if they'd figured out a way to end it musically in a more haunting type of vibe as well, instead of kicking into that thing. Because I'm just like, I hear that even when I first heard the album and I was happy to hear like heavy stuff on it for a moment, I just thought, what the heck? You know, what does this have to do with this song? It's just bizarre.
Yeah, exactly. But we have to say, though, it's not necessarily a very heavy song. It's more groovy than it's heavy, but it's still a little out of place. To me, though, when I put my analytic hat on ahead of this podcast and you try to listen to it again, bring it up and see how you feel about stuff. And yeah, I tend to take a little critical view and maybe it doesn't fit that well. But then I think back to all the years when I first heard it and whenever I play the album, I've never thought like that. I thought, oh, that's cool. So I don't know. Yeah. So maybe it's too easy to put a magnifying glass on it. And when it all comes down to it, I've always thought, oh, that's okay. That's pretty nice.
It could be just a product of us spending so much time thinking about these songs lately, you know?
Yeah, I think that needs to be mentioned as a possibility, yes.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. So that's No Place Like Home, track by track. I think we've probably had our fill of No Place Like Home now for a while, both you and I.
I'll go back and listen to it again.
I know.
It's inspiring to talk about it. You always get other perspectives.
Yeah, no
doubt. So I'm gonna have to go back and see how much I really hate Leap of Faith.
Yeah, I've listened to it enough over the years that I don't have to keep testing that theory. But
you mean once?
No, I listened to it more than once. I really have. You know,
twice.
Three times, maybe.
Yeah.
This album was released in mid-September, it says, in 1991, and it stuck at number 28, remaining in the charts for just 2 weeks, and then it disappeared. So, you know, I guess final thoughts about this album. It's, as we said when we first started to bring it up, it's probably one of the more divisive albums in the catalog, and you know, you and I have had shown that just with some of our disagreements on the songs. I mean, you know, there are big country albums where pretty much everyone's going to be in lockstep with the songs to some degree. You know, some might think a song is good and another's great, but there are very rarely albums by big country where people think a song is absolutely horrible and others think it's brilliant. You know, but you do get that with this album, and You get people who think this album is brilliant. And as I was telling you last time, I was looking on iTunes recently, and I saw a review for this album, and someone said it's their best album ever. So, you know, I can't understand that, but, you know, that's just the way music is, and everyone's going to have a different viewpoint of it. And it's interesting that this album elicits such a large range of viewpoints. But I guess the last thing I'll say about it is, just looking back now that I have the benefit of just, you know, looking at all the big country albums as a whole and being able to pick and choose what I feel like listening to at any particular time, you know, like I said last time, I think this is a nice fit. I like that it's in the catalog. I wish it had been a better album for me in some respects. I would have loved if they would have done like a really better, haunting, more bare bones album like this seemed like it was going to be. But I just wish the quality had been better in places. I do think there are some other B-sides that could have been worked as better songs for this album. I'm thinking of Troubled Man, which I think could have fit on this album beautifully. I think even The Long Road is a song that I think is a good tune that could have fit on here. Return of the Two-Headed King was a song that was probably wouldn't fit on this album, but it was a B-side to Beautiful People that I remember absolutely going crazy for, because when I played that, it was like, yes, this is the old big country sound that I love. You know, overall, I do listen to this album a lot. You know, as much as I might criticize it, I do tend to bring it out a lot and listen. And there's just a certain mood to it that is unique, I think. And I think probably Driving to Damascus maybe is the closest big country album as far as having songs that capture the type of mood that's on No Place Like Home. You know, there are some songs from that era that really would have fit in nicely. Maybe combining the Damascus era and the No Place Like Home era, the best bits of both would create that awesome, you know, big haunting, sparse big country album.
Yeah, we forgot to rank Into the Fire, by the way.
What was my ranking for Into the Fire?
It was 7.
It was 7, yes, thank you.
Yeah, and my ranking is 7 as well.
Okay, cool. We had a lot of similar ones.
A lot of similar ones, and what I've done is I've taken note of all our rankings, so I add our points together, and that creates a list. So this is Tom and Svein's ranking together for No Place Like Home.
Oh, cool.
And we find on the bottom, There's Justice in the World, You, Me, and the Truth, tied with Beautiful People, I should say. So that's 12 and 11.
That's Injustice.
It's hopeless, isn't it?
It's hopeless.
Republican Party, Reptile is number 10. Leap of Faith is number 9. Beat the Devil is number 8. Ships is number 7. Into the Fire number 6. Comes the Time number 5. Keep on Dreaming number 4. And the top 3 is Hostage Speaks at number 3. Dynamite Lady number 2. And Kansas hits the spot.
Cool. I can live with that top 3.
So to me, No Place Like Home is an album that I pull out from time to time. And it struck me, I was trying to rank albums, and there are some eternal truths that Steel Town is always going to be up there. The Crossing is always going to be up there. It's going to be hard to rank other people's above them. But when you look at, on a different level, which albums are you most likely to actually pull out and play? I have to admit, I'm a bit burned out on The Crossing. And
I am too, actually.
Yeah, and I've listened a bit to Steel Town, and The Seer doesn't come out as much. So that's really the first 3 right there. So the ones I actually pull out are No Place Like Home. I pull out Why the Long Face quite a bit. And I put out a lot of songs from the Driving to Damascus sessions. I don't put out as much Driving to Damascus, the album. But those are the 3 eras that I seem to listen the most to. So if you forget the eternal truths, it's definitely up there in terms of which albums I actually listen to and pull out from time to time. And that tells me that they hit something with this album that it worked on some level, and a lot of the songs on this album are big country classics to me.
Great. Well, I think it was a great discussion, and you know, it's fun to go through this, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. And I know a lot of people are going to disagree with me, and a lot of people are going to disagree with Svein, depending on where you stand on these songs. But you know, as we said earlier, hopefully no one takes any of this personally or poorly, and we all feel passionately about what we feel passionately about. And at the end of the day, we love the band and we love the albums, and you know, I love No Place Like Home for what it is, and I'm sure everyone else does too. So even with our criticisms, we always keep that in mind, and obviously we wouldn't be spending the time we're spending if we didn't love these things, even the ones that we criticize. So
I would like to encourage everybody to visit the Facebook page. The discussion will no doubt continue there, and I know both Tom and myself will love to engage with you there. If you disagree with us, if you agree with us, if you want to take side with one of us, anything that's fun, it all happens there. So thank you for the support again. I hope this will continue to grow, and by all signs, it is.
Please continue to email us. You can email us at bigcountrypodcast@gmail.com. And as Svein said, look for us on Facebook as well. So if you want to check out any of my own original music, you can do that at reverbnation.com/Thomas Kercheval. So if you want to check some of that out, please do. Very heavily Big Country influence, as you might imagine. You might like it. You may not. Give it a listen. And so that's it. Keep in touch with us on Facebook, and we'll let you know as soon as we figure out what we're going to do next. If you have any suggestions or anything you'd like to see a show about, please feel free to let us know. And we will talk to you next time.
Yeah. Ciao.
The beauty is an ecstasy. Anger keeps you poor. A hungry man is never free. A rich man never cured. Things were never what they used to be. Every cloud has its silver lining. We all got stuff to sell. And you may live your life so better than remember it so well. Things were never what they used to be. For all the folks who can run the world, drive cabs or cut your hair, and the sun may set without your help, but you're beautiful people to me. You may fall before you're pushed, but it's beautiful people I see. If you only see the stars when it's dark, that's enough for me. An empty soul with a full opinion is beautiful people to me. It's all the same, different hats, the proof of the missing link. Nation talking to itself, and none of us can think. Things were never what they used to be. For a silent fool may still be wise, there's no way you can tell. And the captain more scared than his crew. Beautiful people to me. The finest government you could buy. Beautiful people I see. And if you live 5-1 against, it's good enough for me. Can't use 2 steps to cross a canyon. The beautiful people to me. If you don't see the same trees I see, the beautiful people to me. the desert's bloom and the ocean's darky. It's beautiful people I see. If the last and dying of civilization, that's enough for me. If you believe your own blind darky, you're beautiful people to me. You may miss what you never had it, and have what you don't need. And the sun may set without your help, but you're beautiful people to me. And you may fall before you're pushed, but it's beautiful people I see. If you're lost and dying of civilization, that's enough for me. If you believe